This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. Our hour of old-time radio crime begins with yours truly, Johnny Dollar, this week. We'll hear his episode from October 25th, 1959, titled The Double Identity Matter. After that, it's Let George Do It and Portrait by Priscilla, his story from April 10th, 1950.
Johnny Dollar.
Well, here I am. I'm home.
Huh? Who,
I said I'm home from my vacation.
Wow, great. Good for you.
So, when are you going to come over and ask me to marry you?
Oh, it's you.
Well.
Well, I don't know. How about if I pop the question right now?
Well, go ahead.
Will you marry me, Paula?
You bet your life. What, Paula?
Who else?
Why, you toot. I mean, yeah. This is Betty Lewis.
Yeah, I know.
Come clean with me, Johnny. Who's Paula?
Oh, now, does it make any difference?
Paula who, Johnny? Johnny?
Oh, Smith, Jones, Brown, you pick one.
You rascal, I could... You were kidding me, weren't you?
Weren't you kidding me?
Yeah, sure, I guess so.
Oh, sure, honey. With this crazy business of mine getting slugged and shot at all the time, well, you know as well as I do, it wouldn't be conducive to a happy married life. Not for either of us.
Yes, I know, honey, but someday...
Yeah, someday.
Anyhow, I'm home again for my extended vacation, so...
So, how about dinner and a show and a big night all around?
I'd love it.
Say 7 o'clock?
Make it 6:30 and I'll have cocktails ready and waiting right here at 11325.
Ready, my love, it's a deal.
Good. I'll see you in exactly 7 hours and 31 minutes.
On the nose.
Bye, honey.
Yeah. Well, let's see now. Yeah, honey.
Huh? Don't give me that honey stuff. This is Randy Singer.
Randy, how's the old New York Police Department these days?
Johnny, I gotta see you.
Okay, I'll run on down there first thing in the morning.
I mean now, right now.
Oh, well, now, look, Randy, I got a date tonight, important one.
Yeah, and I gotta go out of town with the chief on a murder case. Leave me in a couple of hours. Maybe gone a week, maybe longer, so grab a train, will you?
Well, if I could be sure of getting back here by early this evening.
Back there in Hartford is where you should be, as quickly as possible.
Huh?
After I've talked to you. So if this timetable I have means anything, you can grab a train in about 20 minutes.
Well, now listen, Randy,
I'll
don't...
have the boys in the prowl car pick you up at Grand Central Station.
Listen, will
so
you?
Grab your hat and come on. See you, Johnny.
Randy!
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Are you smoking more now, but enjoying your breath?
Have a real cigarette, have a Camel.
Are you missing the smoke, the nation like this?
Have a real cigarette, have a Camel.
Are you looking for flavor and mildness?
Have a real cigarette, have a Camel.
The best tobacco makes the very best smoke.
Have a real cigarette.
A real cigarette.
A real cigarette, have a Camel.
If you're smoking more today, but enjoying it less, try Camels. More people smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Any filter, any king, any regular. The Camel blend of costly tobaccos has never been equal for rich flavor and easygoing mildness. The best tobacco makes the best smoke.
Have a real cigarette.
A real cigarette.
A real cigarette. Have a Camel.
And now, Act One of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. Attention, Mr. Pat McCracken. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the double identity matter. Pat, you have an assignment to this case, but it does concern some of the insurance companies that Universal Adjustment Bureau services. And if there's any question about reimbursing me for whatever charges I may run up, I'll read on. Expense account item 1, $495, taxi to the station and a train down to New York.
As promised, Lieutenant Randy Singer had a prowl car waiting for me at Grand Central, and a few minutes later, I barged into his office in the Homicide Division of the 18th Precinct.
Okay, Conroy, okay. Just go tell the chief I'll be ready to leave by the time he is. Now, go ahead.
Yes, sir, Lieutenant.
Sit down, Johnny. Glad you can make it.
All right. Tell me one thing, Randy. Is this an insurance matter?
It sure is, or rather, they are.
They?
Maybe you weren't called in on them, but, brother, you should have been. Here, look here. Fall 1956. John R.V. Brownfield. Lived in a small apartment over on the east side, but the old boy had a lot of money.
So what happened? Somebody knock him off?
His death was pronounced a suicide, overdose of sleeping pills.
Yeah, happens all the time.
Does it? The insurance company that paid off was Eastern Casualty and Trust.
Oh? How much?
$41,000.
Beneficiary?
His wife. He'd only been married to her a couple of months. And after she collected, well, she just sort of dropped out of sight. Ask me, a lot of those companies of yours pay off too fast.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Listen, September 1957. Franklin P. Ogborn died the same way. Insurance paid to his widow was $30,000. Tri-Mutual Insurance Company.
Well, now, Randy, the mere fact that he also died from an overdose...
Listen, will you? August 1958. Peter William Gerhardt. Same thing. His widow collected $50,000.
Are you trying to say you don't think they were suicides, Randy?
I'd bet my bottom dollar on it.
Why?
Now, here's the last one, middle of last month. William Earl Chadwick, $25,000 to the widow.
I said, why?
Johnny, in every case, the marriage was only a few weeks old. A good-looking young girl and a wealthy old man. Also, circumstances of death were exactly the same. Exactly.
You investigate them all yourself?
No, they all occurred in different precincts. So until I started digging through these files, until I realized that all these men had been married, and for only a short time, mind you, had all been married to the same girl.
What?
Yes, sir.
You're sure of that?
She used a different name every time, and we have no pictures of her, but Johnny, according to the description by all the people who'd seen her... Well, Johnny, it's one and the same gal.
Okay, Randy, as long as there was insurance paid by some of the companies I worked for.
Right. Now, so far, I've been running this down alone, on my own hook, until I could really spot her. So what happens when I finally do locate this dame?
All right, what happens?
She turns up outside my bailiwick. Also, I suddenly got to go out of town for a week, maybe longer. But you, being right there...
Yeah, right where?
Hartford. That's where I've traced her to.
Oh? You know her name?
Sure do. So I'm handing it over to you, Johnny. You've done me a lot of favors over the years, so... Well, maybe you can collect yourself a nice commission.
Oh, what is her name, Randy?
She lives at 11325 East Maple Drive.
11325?
That's right, and she goes by the name of Lewis.
What?
Yep. Betty Lewis. What's the matter, Johnny?
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. Are you looking for a career with a lot of bright job opportunities and a chance to be someone? Then by all means, look into professional nursing. Young women between 18 and 35... who are high school graduates in good physical condition, can qualify for nurses' training. There are many fascinating outlets for nurses' talents. They can work in hospitals, private homes, doctor's offices, in research, industry, or the armed forces. There's a great need for women to teach nursing, too. Women under 50 are also needed as practical nurses. Practical nurses require less training than professional nurses. They assist in hospitals and perform countless valuable services in private practice. This message is also addressed to men, because there's an increasing number of men going into both professional and practical nursing. So, find out if you can qualify for a nurse's career. Inquire at your nearest hospital or inquire at your nearest school of nursing. And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Double Identity Matter.
I went over the files on the so-called suicides word for word. I read and reread the descriptions of the widows. They all were the same. No question about it, the same girl had been married to each of the four victims, had been married to each of them only a very short time. Then after death, from an apparent overdose of sleeping pills, she had collected the insurance and quietly dropped out of sight. But Lieutenant Randy Singer, NYPD, had tracked her down and traced her to Hartford. And according to him, according to the description, she was Betty Lewis of 11325 East Maple Drive. Betty Lewis, the girl I knew and palled around with. The girl I had a date with that very night. The one girl in the world I almost took seriously.
What is it, Johnny? Do you know her? You know this girl?
I, yeah. That is, I think I've seen her there in Hartford already.
Good. Then go back there. Get next to her, Johnny. Trip her up. Make her spill the beans about these murders.
Murders?
Well, don't you agree? She must have fed those old codgers all those sleeping pills just to collect their insurance?
Kind of looks that way, doesn't it?
What's the matter with you, Johnny? It's as plain as the nose on your face. And boy, how those descriptions of her all tie together.
Yeah.
Height, weight, build, complexion, eyes, everything. Of course, she dyed her hair differently a couple of times.
Blonde.
When she married her last victim, she was a redhead. What'd you say? She's a blonde? She's a blonde now?
Randy.
Yeah?
How'd you get onto her?
That's a long story, Johnny, but somewhere along the line, I got suspicious about those sleeping pills. They were all the same, a special prescription. Are you listening to me, Johnny?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Well, then I found out that not one of those old men had been given a prescription for them. So to make a long story short, I finally ran down a kid working in a drugstore who'd been getting them to her.
I see.
But instead of nabbing him, that would have spread the alarm, you see. Johnny, I got real lucky. In the trash barrel where the kid lives, I found some letters for her, all written within the last month, telling him to start making some more of the stuff for her. In other words, Johnny, as soon as she can trick some other guy into wedding bells, somebody up there in Hartford... But if you can grab her first, pin those four murders on her. Huh?
Hey, Lieutenant.
Yeah, Conroy, what do you want?
That newspaper reporter that was here to see you.
Huh? What newspaper reporter?
Well, I told him you was tied up with Johnny Dollar on that suicide run.
You what?
Well, I seen them files there on your trip.
Conroy, you dope. When the chief and I get back from this trip,
oh, that's another thing, Lieutenant.
Huh?
The chief said if you don't want to start pounding a beat again... Well, you see, he's been waiting out front for you for about 5 minutes.
Conroy, you crazy. Why did you say so? Tell him I'm coming. I'm coming right away.
Yes, sir. I'll tell you.
Johnny, will you take it from here?
Yeah.
Down.
Sure, Randy.
Attaboy.
It's truly Johnny Dollar in a moment. Meet star Stuart Erwin.
Nothing's worse for an actor than a nasty cold. To feel better quickly, I take wonderful four-way cold tablets. A fast way to relieve cold distress.
Right. Tests of all the leading cold tablets proved four-way fastest acting. Four-way starts in minutes to relieve muscular pains, headache, reduce fever, calm upset stomach, also overcomes irregularity.
Take my advice. For your next cold, take four-way cold tablets, the fast way to relieve those cold miseries.
Four-way, only 29 cents.
And now here's a word about another fine product of Grove Laboratories. To get rid of embarrassing dandruff in 3 minutes, change to Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo. 3 minutes with Fitch regularly is guaranteed to keep unsightly dandruff away forever. Apply Fitch before wetting hair, rub in 1 minute. Add water, lather 1 minute. Then rinse 1 minute. Every trace of dandruff goes down the drain. 3 minutes with Fitch and embarrassing dandruff's gone. At the same time, Fitch can brighten hair up to 35%. Get Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo today. And now, Act Three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Hi, Johnny.
Ready? Buddy, what are you... I mean, well, what are you doing here?
Hey, don't I even get a kiss after being away for a solid month?
Buddy, tell me.
And don't you think I'm the one who's entitled to ask questions? After all, honey, you stood me up. Or did you completely forget about our date for this evening?
Listen, will you?
Much as I hate to admit it, I guess maybe you were right, darling.
Yeah? About what?
No decent kind of a married life, that sort of thing. You were out on some case, I suppose.
Yeah.
But you know something? I'm just not going to give up on you, Johnny Dollar. One of these
days...
Yeah,
Betty, now listen.
Well, what is it, Johnny? What's the matter?
How did you get in here, Betty?
Well, when you didn't come for me as you promised, and when you didn't answer the telephone, well, I was afraid something terrible might have happened to you, so I drove on over here to see you. The door was wide open, so I just came on in. I started looking around for you in the den in the bedroom, and then that's when you came in.
Betty, your vacation...
Well, it's about time you asked me about that. I missed you while I was away, honey. A whole long month.
I mean, where did you go?
You didn't get all those pretty postcards I sent you? From the Poconos and Atlantic City and New York?
New York. How long in New York?
Oh, a couple of days going, a couple of days coming back.
That's all?
Of course it is. Johnny, what's the matter with you?
Your hair, Betty.
What?
What color was it before?
Well, I like that.
What color? Tell me.
You mean to say you think I dye or bleach it or something? You know very well that I... Johnny, what's come over you?
My desk there.
Well, yes, I wondered about that, darling. I hope you're not always that sloppy, leaving things scattered around that way.
All right, Betty, listen.
And do you always leave that window to the fire escape open when you go out?
Window?
To say nothing of leaving the front door open, too.
Hey, Betty, look.
Huh? Hmm?
Look, it's been jimmied open. See the marks here?
Well?
Yeah, see, look. Here, where it was pried open. See there?
Well, it's just like my mailbox.
Sure.
You seem almost happy about it.
Well, maybe I am.
Or did you think maybe I had... Only you know darn well I can't even use a can opener properly. Well, now, listen, Johnny, will you please tell me what this is all about? Why are you acting so strangely?
Eddie Lewis.
Listen, darling, has all this big mystery anything to do with that newspaper headline I saw? Some kind of a suicide case?
You don't know anything about that.
So that's why you were so late. And Johnny, does it have anything to do with your window being forced open, your desk being rifled this way?
Yeah, I think so. And maybe you're coming here. Maybe you scared away whoever it was. Wait a minute. Did you say that your mailbox out at your little house, did you say that thing had been forced open, too?
Well, I was away. I don't know whether anything was taken, because I don't usually get much mail, but the tiny lock on it was broken.
You came back yesterday?
Late last night. And then today, well, you see, the mail's always delivered during the day while I'm at the office.
What time, Betty?
Oh, I don't know. 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, I think.
So what happened today?
Well, you know that rain, that drizzle we had this morning?
Yeah, go on.
Well, I got back from the office and went out to see if there was any mail. Now, you love mysteries, Johnny, so maybe you can solve this.
Go on, Betty, go on.
All right. Well, there in the mud around the mailbox were the marks from those big clodhoppers the mailman always wears.
Well?
And right on top of them were some other footprints. High heels, Johnny.
Of course.
The shoes must have been almost exactly the same size as mine. So, do you suppose maybe somebody else, some woman, has been using my mailbox and my address while I was away?
You bet I do. Betty Lewis.
What?
10 or 11 o'clock, you said.
Oh, you mean the mailman?
That's exactly what I mean. Now, listen, I want a key to your house.
Oh? Will you marry me?
I'm serious, Betty, and tomorrow morning you go to the office as usual.
Don't you mean if I feel up to it after we finish celebrating my homecoming tonight?
That party's going to be tomorrow night.
Tomorrow?
Because I have a sneaking suspicion that by then we're going to have something to really celebrate.
Oh, like what, dear?
The solution of four murders.
Oh, Johnny.
Shortly after Betty left for the office the next morning, I established myself in a little house on East Maple Drive. I parked myself behind the filmy curtains at one of the front windows, and I waited. At 10:31, the mailman walked up. In addition to a couple of letters, he left a small package in the mailbox. It didn't take much to guess what was in it. I waited some more. An hour and a half. Did whoever that package was intended for, and I was sure it wasn't Betty, did they know the mailbox was being watched? After all, they knew from the newspapers that I was on the case. But unless they appeared to collect this package, I had no case. Then it suddenly occurred to me, the important thing was to be sure of having that package myself as evidence. So after making sure the street was clear both ways, I slipped out the front door, walked casually out to the mailbox. Uh-huh. Miss Betty Lewis. 11:320.
Just a minute there, you.
Yes?
Just what do you think you're doing poking around my mailbox that way?
By golly, you do look like her.
What are you talking about?
The real Betty Lewis.
Well, I'm Betty Lewis. Now, if you don't mind, that package you just took out of the mailbox.
Sorry, miss, whatever your name is, but I need it as part of the evidence.
Evidence?
Yeah. That'll pin the murders of four husbands on you.
Thank God.
That's right.
All right. Give me that package.
Oh, put that thing down, lady.
I'll pull the trigger, Johnny, if you don't give me that package. Give it to me.
Okay. Whatever you say.
You dirty...
Maybe you're a lousy shot.
No, you're hurting me. Oh.
Okay, now back in your car.
Now listen... Johnny, listen.
Get in.
Listen, Johnny, I'll make a deal with you.
And you're driving, lady. Right straight to police headquarters. Sure, there's a lot more to be done, only by the police, both in Hartford and down in New York. But there's not much doubt about the outcome, especially since the kid who supplied the drugs broke down and said plenty. The insurance companies, well, the money she had left can be prorated among them, and that'll be that. My problem, of course, will be explaining things to Betty. But you know something? That may have its pleasant aspects, too. So expense account total, well, call it $20. Provided there's also a fee on this one. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment.
Constipation is something people don't talk much about, but it can be a problem for anyone, even doctors. And when constipation occurs, it's interesting to see just what doctors consider important about a laxative they might use or recommend. Now, a majority of the doctors we heard from had this to say. A laxative should be effective, gentle, as close to natural acting as possible, and a medicine that can be used with complete confidence. Well, pleasant-tasting chocolated X-Lax is effective. Overnight, it helps you toward your normal regularity. X-Lax is gentle. Next morning, it gives you the closest thing to natural action. And that's why many doctors and millions of people use X-Lax with complete confidence. X-Lax, the laxative that helps you toward your normal regularity gently, overnight.
Is X-Lax in your medicine cabinet?
Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, the wildest bunch of crooks I ever tangled with. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Joan Banks, Lillian Baeff, Herb Vigran, and G. Stanley Jones. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Dan Coverley speaking.
Stacks the cards against a jittery gamble in suspense. Next from the CBS Radio Network.
Personal notice, danger's my stock and trade. If the job's too tough for you to handle, you got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details. Standard Oil Company of California, on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations throughout the West, invites you to Let George Do It. Portrait by Priscilla, another adventure of George Valentine.
Hello? Hello? Is anyone here? Is anyone...
Oh! Look out, you clumsy ape. You'll knock over the scrub bucket.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I was looking for the proprietor of the art store here.
How should I know? Look around yourself.
Well, I haven't much time. I'm from Fairbanks.
Get your foot off my mouth.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Back room upstairs after lunch, maybe. Look around. Steal a picture. I don't care.
Oh, I do a legitimate business with this shop. Supplies, prints, and reproductions in the $1.95 class. My department store in Fairview sells quite a few of those. Oh. Well. I say, is anyone up there? No. Chinese glass chime. Well, would you look at that? But it's not bad. Portrait by Priscilla. Who's that? Personal notice. Danger is my stock in trade. If the job is... Yes. Dear. Mister. Valentine.
But couldn't you see who it was? Couldn't you see who hit you?
Well, no, Miss Brooks, it happened so fast. I was struck from behind. I have a terrible lump on my head.
All right, Mr. Simpson, I understand that part of it. Whoever it was probably hiding behind the door.
Yes, that's what I thought.
What kind of a place was this, the Grafters Clay and Art Shop?
Well, they sell mostly artist supplies. They're in the bohemian section of town.
Uh-huh.
But the owner, Ben Grafters, does a mail-order business, too. That's how I happen to be there.
You mean he sends pictures to this department store of yours in Fairview?
Yes, just prints, reproductions. It's very modest. But I've always wanted to meet Mr. Grafters. His letters have always been so friendly. When I order pictures, I tell him about the fishing up there, and he answers with gossip about his wife, his car, or his opinions of the art world. He's quite an authority. I always wanted to know more about art.
And so you decided to look him up this time when you came to town?
Well, he knew I was coming. He wrote and asked me to. He asked me to meet him for dinner tonight at the Romany restaurant. When I found a moment's spare time, I thought I'd run around to his shop and meet him in advance. That's all I was doing there.
Uh-huh.
But nothing of mine had been stolen. I was carrying a great deal of money, too, $500.
Oh. So you come back to your hotel here and you didn't report it to the police. Where do I fit in all this, Mr. Simpson?
Well, I thought Grafters has never actually seen me. I thought perhaps if you went in my place tonight to meet
him... Are you suspicious of Grafters?
Yes, the first thing I would have done would have been to get in touch with him.
Well, Mr. Valentine, I'd written this man from Fairview that I would enjoy some excitement. I was anxious to meet some of the artists, the unusual types one hears so much about.
Oh, I'm beginning to see. You had yourself set up for a fast night in the big city, and now you've got cold feet.
Oh, no, no. Though I'll grant you, I'm not exactly the type for... Well, I don't really know anything about Grafters, and suppose he's in trouble of some kind. Would I be of any help?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr.
Oh, listen. I haven't told you about the portrait yet.
The what?
I was standing looking at this oil portrait. It was on the easel, not quite finished
yet. No, you
yet.
Did tell us about that. Portrait by Priscilla, whoever that might be.
Well, when I came to, the portrait was gone. It had been taken right off the easel.
Well, you finally said something.
Mr. Simpson, portrait of what?
It was an oil. Just the head and shoulders of a man. A gray-haired man, about 50, bushy eyebrows. Oh, and I remember a rather sharply cleft chin. Because his mouth was young, with a mole on the lip. Oh, Grafters, that must be him. In his last letter, he said he'd call me up to confirm.
Never mind, I'll find out for him. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Simpson. It's so nice to hear your voice. All the potatoes and fish and everything up in Fairview.
Who is this?
Am I fresh? I'm calling for Benny. Ben Grafters.
Oh, yes.
Benny, the customer, and just wanted to make sure that 8 o'clock is all right at the Romany. It's a gloomy little place, but you will be there, won't you? You can find it all right.
Well, look here,
Simpson, isn't it? My name is Priscilla.
You're...
Just Priscilla. Nothing before, nothing after.
Oh. Well, how do you do? Yes, of course. Tell Mr. Grafters I'll be there at 8. I am Mr. Simpson. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Valentine.
I beg your pardon, you're...
Mr. Simpson?
Yes, it's not so easy to find anybody here. It's rather dark.
I'm sorry, I should have waited at the bar, but
Hello.
Mr. Simpson, this is Miss...
Priscilla, we've met.
Oh, on the telephone.
What's the matter? Haven't you ever shaken hands with a girl who wears black nail polish before? Violent reaction to the name Priscilla, I suppose.
Well, it's very attractive.
Oh, but you're going to be alone, don't worry. Two men in the town... I only stopped by for a drink.
Priscilla, please.
I told you no, Benny. I have another engagement. Now I have to run home and dress.
And drink your drink. Stop fiddling with your watch.
Benny!
That's a very unusual watch.
Oh, isn't it, though? New. It even strikes the hour. See? And it's 8 o'clock and much too late. And goodbye, Buffy.
Oh, no, please. Gee, I... I don't get to meet artists every day up in Fairview. I mean, well, I've heard of you. Your portrait...
I'm not a good painter, Mr. Simpson, but yours.
Oh, no, please sit down. Look, this is my night in the city. But you know, Ben here is kind of a surprise. I expected an older man. Gray hair, bushy eyebrows, cleft chin, maybe. Or a mole on your lip.
Well, the mystery is solved, Benny. Did you steal my painting, Mr. Simpson?
No. But who was the old guy, the cleft chin?
A very dull painting of a very dull man.
Good night, Priscilla.
What? But Benny...
I said good night. You've got a date, haven't you?
Hey, no, wait a minute.
Oh, please, Mr. Simpson, a lady can take a hint. It's not important anyway. Bye-bye, Fairview. Provincial people are
wrong. What's the matter?
Well, it was pretty easy to figure out what had happened upstairs there. Picture missing, blood on the floor, little signs of struggle. There'd been somebody up there besides whoever it was that took that picture. But I had no idea that it had been you, Mr. Simpson.
I hope I didn't mess up your store too much.
I rent the upstairs to Priscilla as a studio.
Oh?
You would have known that if you were really Mr. Simpson. I mentioned it in one of my letters.
Oh, I see. Well, suppose Mr. Simpson doesn't feel well and asks me to come tonight in his place. Would that be anything for you to be so pale about?
I'm not pale. Waiter.
Now, just take it easy. Look, my name's George Valentine. I've looked you up, Mr. Graftis, and you seem to be okay. Come on, now, what's this all about?
Well, I don't quite know. That's the crazy part of it. Maybe it's, like she says, not important. Well, okay, Mr. Valentine, or whoever you are. It's in the budget to entertain a customer from out of town tonight, so let's go. Order a steak. Tell me the story of your life.
You in love with this painter, this Priscilla?
Mr. Valentine, don't try to solve all the riddles. I've got a wife. She's not very well. I work hard for her.
Okay, I'll try again.
I said don't
try and... Aren't
you
just as curious as I am what it was all about? Isn't that what you yourself are doing here with Priscilla, trying to find out who might have stolen the picture and why? That is, unless you did.
No, I didn't. Well, I don't know, Mr. Valentine. Priscilla's strange. All that gaudy manner and, well, not really a very good painter. Yes. Yes, I suppose I am a little curious.
Okay, then what do you say we skip the steak? And try to find some answers.
Mr. Stokolski. We're trying to identify a man in a picture.
We haven't had much luck the past hour or two.
Any man, any picture. To settle a bet, huh? You're at the right place, gentlemen.
Yeah, I understand you're one of the biggest art gallery owners in town.
The biggest, 300 pounds. Now, what is the period of
the painting? It's a portrait, Mr. Stokolski. A man in a portrait.
Huh. A portrait by Priscilla.
Well, I told Mr. Valentine here that you handled her other pictures for sale. That is, some of them. Well, you were in her studio just a couple of days ago. I thought perhaps you'd notice...
What does the man look like, the subject of this portrait?
Well, he has gray hair, about 50, bushy eyebrows, cleft chin, a rather young or weak mouth, with a mole on the lip.
I am just on the telephone to a man who has been asking about the same person.
Yeah?
The subject of this particular portrait by Priscilla is Richard Rutterman. Huh? I'm just informed that this Mr. Rutterman has blown his brains out.
Yeah, that's right. He's a big shot broker, and now he's stone cold dead on the market.
Lieutenant Devlin, you sure it's suicide?
Of course I'm sure. Every test proves it.
What about the picture, the portrait?
It's lying on the desk in his study. He's lying on top of that.
So maybe he's the one who slugged Simpson.
So maybe a lot of things. So maybe there's a lady I'd like to talk to named Priscilla.
All right, Devlin. I'll meet you at her place. Only I told you she had a date.
Date with whom? What kind of a social secretary are you?
Grafter, you sure you don't know who her date was with?
I'm sorry, Mr. Valentine, but she has an apartment up
there. Valentine, are you still there?
We could wait for
her.
Okay.
We can look around, Devlin. Maybe she keeps a diary. I'll see you there.
Well, Valentine, the lady of mystery, huh?
Yeah. She'll be keeping her mystery now, won't she, Devlin?
Yep.
She's dead. She's been strangled.
Return to tonight's adventure of George Valentine in just a moment. You've seen even older cars on the highway that have lots of pep in traffic, that take the hills as if they had lots of reserve power. Well, that's the kind of performance that gives you that new car feeling. But you'll never experience this feeling if engine-sticking gum is robbing your car of its power. Gum, every motorist should know, is formed by the impurities existing in most raw gasolines. And the only way to get it out is to refine it out. Chevron Supreme Gasoline is the gasoline that is super refined to eliminate power-robbing gum. So to get and keep that new car feeling, try this premium quality gasoline. You'll like your car's new, improved response and the full mileage you get in the kind of driving you do. Ask for super refined Chevron Supreme at independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations where they say and mean we take better care of your car. Portrait by Priscilla. The man whose portrait it was is now dead. A suicide. Well, of course, if your name is George Valentine, you'd like to have another talk with the artist, Priscilla. Only when you go to her apartment, you find a slight hitch in your plan. Priscilla is dead, too. She's been strangled.
Yeah, that's what the doc says. Hurry it up with the pictures, will you there, boys?
How long ago did he say, Lieutenant?
Oh, hour, two... Hard to tell.
Well, it must have been just after she left us in the restaurant. Because she said she was going to change her clothes, and she didn't. Same gold dress.
Mm-hmm. Black fingernail polish.
Yeah, and the same flashy earrings. She jingled when she walked. Yeah, lots of color. But both Stokowski and Grafter said she wasn't a very good painter. The only one who seemed to think differently was Mr. Simpson here.
What? Well, I'm really no judge. I come from a small town.
I imagine there's some very good critics up there.
But I'm certainly not one of them.
Valentine, what you're talking about is this apartment itself, Jack.
Yeah, pretty fancy.
Oh, it is, indeed.
A pretty fancy apartment for an unsuccessful artist.
Yeah, Priscilla must have had a private income.
That mysterious date of hers tonight, that's what I'm going to find
hey,
out.
Wait a minute, Devil.
Yeah?
A watch.
I noticed it too, George. It stopped running, hasn't it? Like all her things, it's so unusual.
Looks valuable, too, Brooksy. Hey, you mind if I take it, Devlin?
Hey, what is this? Why? Why do you want to take it?
To get the same answers you're after. Only while you're going your way, me, I'll take a shortcut.
Monsieur Valentin, you are in general not stupid. But there is nothing wrong with your watch that a little winding will not fix. For this, you should get me from bed, huh? Now, like so, it will chime for you.
Hey, will you please slow down? I want to know the price of the watch.
This gaudy old-fashioned...
The way it's fixed, it's really quite fashionable.
For a bauble to catch the eye and never tell the right time.
Well, that's just it. It is a bauble. But it has stones in it. And a woman wouldn't buy that for herself, would she?
But, George, she might. I mean, for a woman with money.
I say $2,000... I say maybe $2,500.
I take it back. She wouldn't.
Huh? A gift from an admirer. Well, Angel, I remember Priscilla mentioned the watch was new.
Well, maybe from the current admirer. Maybe the man she had the date with.
Who'd sell a thing like this, friend?
Only an idiot who would sell gold paddles for canoes. An ignoramus who has never seen the Alps.
Look, Buster, I know it offends your good Swiss taste, but will you please...
It is a custom job, monsieur. EW, that is Excelsior Watches Chicago. You will have to see them, the makers. And may I say, monsieur, have you ever noticed how all the wrong people get strangled, yourself not excepted? Good night.
all right, Valentine. You got your wire off to Chicago, now you're happy, are you? I still say that in a murder case, you should never overlook the obvious.
Like what, Devlin?
I rechecked on the times of death, and I found
Oh, you mean you finally figured out that maybe Mr. Radiman killed her and then went home and shot himself.
Miss Brooks, I got Mrs. Radiman on the griddle. She admitted she told her husband she was going to leave him because of this Priscilla who'd been painting his portrait. He'd been spending plenty of money on the girl. Well, it was too much for the guy, and later on he pulled out his gun, and that's that.
Wait a minute. If Radiman was Priscilla's one and only, would she have made the crack to me that it was a very dull picture of a very dull man? So tell us what else you've been doing, Devlin.
Now listen to me, both, and wait a minute. Yeah, Lieutenant Devlin.
Lieutenant, this is Ben Grafters.
Yeah, Grafters?
Here, give me that.
What?
What is it, Grafters?
Valentine, I came back to the shop. It's where my wife picks me up in the car to drive home, only...
Well, go on, what happened?
There's a light still on upstairs in Priscilla's studio. I didn't go in because I think there's someone up there.
There he goes. Grab it.
Slow down. Slow down, my friend.
You don't have to break my arm. I'm not doing anything.
Oh, no, you're not doing anything. Not much.
Mr. Stokowski.
Yeah, how do you like this? One of the biggest art dealers in town, and we catch him burning up pictures.
And I'm not saying anything either. I know my rights.
Well, that's a good one.
But some of them are his pictures, Mr. Valentine.
You be quiet, Ben.
I mean, he paid her for them several times. I've seen him come up here giving her checks.
Shut up!
Buster, it's your turn to shut up. Now, look, you're a big shot. You buy nothing but the best. And Priscilla wasn't a very good painter. Now, here, let's take a look at this stuff, whatever's left of it.
Here's one, George, upside down.
Yeah, let me see that.
Mm-hmm. Piece of a landscape. Yeah, here's another portrait.
Hey, wait a minute. I've met this guy, this one. Not very good of him, but he's a paving contractor here in town, pretty well fixed. And this other one over here. I've seen his picture in the newspaper. Big manufacturer.
Yeah, Devlin. For a second-rate artist, Priscilla seemed to draw a first-class clientele. Only the noble Stokowski here probably thought the boys would appreciate no publicity.
Mr. Valentine,
you came down here the minute you heard about her death to keep things quiet. Like the prices you paid for her landscapes that were lousy. Like who these other suckers were in a little black book.
Now, wait a minute.
When you bought pictures from Priscilla, Buster, it was only to hide the fact you were paying blackmail. That's the explanation of where she got her money, Devlin. Blackmail.
Sure. She was just a good enough painter to get the big boys close enough to work on. They get mixed up with her and set for the frame. Portrait by Priscilla.
I didn't say anything. I remind you, I have not admitted
that... Wait a minute. No. If that's the case, then any of these guys might have had just as much motive as Ratterman.
Oh, excuse me, Lieutenant.
Go away.
I'm sorry, sir, but the car radio says there's a telegram from Mr. Valentine at the office. It's from Chicago. You can use the phone down the street.
Well, guess we better play it my way after all, huh, Devlin? If we keep our fingers crossed, maybe we can chop the field down to size again. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Yeah, I got it all. Okay, thanks, Sergeant.
What was it, Mr. Valentine? Hmm?
Oh, not exactly what I expected, Graftis.
What do you mean?
Well, maybe it wasn't that. Only, we'll have to work fast. Now, look, you said your wife was waiting for you around here someplace.
Well, yes. Right out here by the car. Darling. Darling, this is George Valentine.
Oh. How do you do?
Hello.
Isn't it simply awful about poor Priscilla?
Look, please excuse me, but we haven't much time, and I think it'd be safer if your wife came back upstairs to Priscilla's studio with us.
Well, sure. Whatever you say. Hey, where's everybody gone?
Outside. That's part of it. Here, Mrs. Grafter, sit down, won't you?
What? Oh, thank you, but I don't understand.
Well, it's really pretty simple. I need your help, both of you. You see, the doctor says that Priscilla couldn't have been strangled by a woman.
What?
And, of course, Ben here was right with me all evening. So, you're the only ones I can turn to. Now, listen. That phone call I made, it was about a telegram to Chicago, an outfit that makes custom watches. Only the trouble was, they said the watches were sent to Mr. Zimmy Zimmerman, care of General Delivery, this city.
Oh, wait a minute. You mean you were thinking about that watch of Priscilla's, the funny one that she had on?
Yeah, yeah. I was hoping they could tell me who bought it. Only Zimmy Zimmerman. Now, that's a phony, pretty obviously.
Oh, I see.
Benny, what's the matter?
Well, nothing. Nothing, darling. I just...
Mr. Graftis, you would help clear the air a lot if you'd admit that you gave Priscilla that watch.
What?
Mr. Valentine, I think you've got a lot of nerve to...
Skipper, will you? There isn't time. Now, listen. Yeah, they're right out there now.
Mr. Valentine, really?
You want to know what Devlin and the others are doing out there? They're searching your car, Graftis.
Searching my car?
Yeah, something might catch their eye. It's funny how things catch your eye. Especially in a dim place like the Romilly.
You said Lieutenant Devlin is outside looking into my...
They won't find any of the flashy things, will they? Gold dress, big earrings, the jingle. Might find some polish remover, though, for the black nail polish.
Valentine!
Oh, no, you don't, Foster. You're not big enough. That telegram said watches, plural. But I'd already begun to guess before then.
No.
Guess
no,
that Priscilla wasn't really so exceptionally good-looking or anything else if you took your eyes away from all the trappings, the exotic touches, the eye-catches. But who could do that?
Please. No, now listen
to
me.
When I saw her, the real Priscilla, especially after the way she was killed, how could I tell the difference? Hey, what's the matter with your purse, sister? Give me that.
Then let go!
Darling.
The little wife got rid of the other stuff for the masquerade, but couldn't resist hanging on to the expensive watch, could she? Sure, here it is. The other watch, Graftis. Exactly like the one you gave Priscilla.
I gave her.
The straw that was to break the camel's back when it came to my identifying her body. Only it's the straw that broke your back instead, Buster. Broke your perfect alibi.
Benny! Benny, stop him! You've got to stop
Shut
him!
Up. Hold it!
Because you killed Priscilla, didn't you, Benny? Killed her and right afterwards brought your wife around to meet me and start setting up your perfect alibi at the Romilly.
What are you talking about, Valentine?
Look what I'm doing. I'm nervously fiddling with a watch. It's exactly what you did in the restaurant, Mrs. Graftis. To call attention to it so I'd remember. Only when you fiddle with a watch, you wind it, don't you? Sure, you did, like this, remember. But only a few minutes later, Priscilla's watch had run down. It stopped.
So?
So? I suspected two watches.
You're pretty smart, Mr. Valentine.
Benny, don't. No, Benny, don't.
Our car doesn't have anything in it. But this is a gun you're looking at, sucker.
Benny!
Who's the sucker? Thanks, Devlin.
You know, the thing that still keeps bothering me is this poor Ratterman fellow.
Oh, that was just coincidence, Mr. Simpson. His messing around, feeling sorry for himself and the picture being stolen.
But it might have been blamed entirely on him.
I know. That would have been lucky for the Graftises.
There were a lot of men mixed up with the real Priscilla, Mr. Simpson. Any one of them could have been suspected.
But wasn't Ben Graftis mixed up with her himself?
No. No, he just wanted to move in on her blackmail. Up in the hospital, he admitted he'd already swiped a little black book, the note she had on the boys. So, since his wife was the same general type as Priscilla, they dreamed up what they thought was a perfect way of getting rid of her and taking over.
And inviting me, a man who'd never met them, inviting me to dinner here was part of their plan.
Mm-hmm. You would have been the alibi from Fairview.
Yes, here at the Romilly. My, it's a dark, mysterious place, isn't it?
Oh, well, there's nothing wrong with it. I like it where it's dark. People can't see you when you... Oh, Angel.
Yes, darling?
When you take your shoes off. Oh, that feels so good.
Oh, George.
You probably don't know one single motorist who would deliberately drive with the choke out all day for the simple reason that it would be like throwing gasoline away. But if you listen to the car savers at independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations, they'll tell you this. All too many motorists let the air cleaner under the hood get so dirt clogged that it can waste just as much gas as a pulled out choke. Even worse, a dirty air cleaner can mean that some road grit and dust is mixing with the gasoline. And that, of course, is a serious threat to the precision-fitted parts in your car's engine. So to avoid waste of gasoline and possible damage to engine parts, why not have the air cleaner looked at tomorrow? If it calls for a cleaning, that could be done fast and for little cost. It's another car saver service offered to you by independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations, where they say and mean, we take better care of your car. Tonight's adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard Oil Company of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations throughout the West. Robert Bailey is starred as George, with Virginia Gregg as Brooksy. Let George Do It is written by David Victor and Jackson Gillis and directed by Don Clark. Pat McGeehan was heard as Lieutenant Devlin. Bob Griffin as Simpson. Loreen Tuttle as Priscilla. Donald Buca as Graftus. Harold Dierenforth as Stokolski, and Rolf Sedan as the expert. The music is composed and presented by Eddie Dunstetter. Your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
That's Case Closed for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Johnny Dollar, Let George Do It, past episodes of this show, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button, all at the website, relicradio.com. Like to donate, help support this and all the shows, give that button a click. My thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.